John Kershaw, the autobiography of an eminent Lancashire preacher. Publisher's Preface. The autobiography of John Kershaw needs no recommendation. During his lifetime, his name and ministry were known far beyond his hometown, and his memory has been preserved by the repeated publication of his autobiography. The Mercies of a Covenant God, which, with additions by his widow, was last reprinted in 1930. Copies of this book are now difficult to obtain, and the present publishers have been constrained to reprint because of the value of the work and with desire that the Lord may be glorified. The publishers have felt that the value of the work consists largely in the rugged, unvarnished, and straightforward account of the writer, and that it would be a great disservice, if not positively dishonest, to attempt any rewriting or even to improve upon the grammar. Mr. Kershaw's own narrative gives the work its principal appeal, especially to those who love the precious truths for which, under the blessing of the Lord, he so ably contended. The publishers seek the Lord's blessing upon this republication, especially in the hearts of young people, as they may read this Christ-exalting account of divine grace. This record will inform them of men of God who labored so extensively, who proved that where sin abounded, grace did much more abound, Romans 5, verse 20, and who spoke not of duty well done, but were constant in their testimony that the love of Christ constraineth us, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 14. The Life of John Kershaw, Chapter 1, Early Days. Birth. I was born at Lower Field, Hilly, in the parish of Rochdale, in the county of Lancaster, on the 25th of August, 1792. My father, William Kershaw, was a native of Rochdale. When he was 14 years of age, his father, Jonathan Kershaw, bound him apprentice to John Matthew of Syke, shoemaker of the same parish. He served his master truly and faithfully 7 years, and lived with him another 7 years after his apprenticeship. He then got married, and shortly after set up business at Lower Fold, where he resided until his death. The best of feeling always existed between him and his old master. They were mostly together on a Lord's Day at chapel, and on Monday at the Rochdale Market. If one was seen, the other was not far off, they being generally together on all convenient occasions. When John Matthew made his will, my father was appointed principal executor. I have often heard my father say that if he ever knew two men that feared God and were true Christians, it was his master, John Matthew, and his master's father, Old Richard, as he was called. With these two gracious men, my father had been most intimately acquainted, both in things temporal and spiritual, and always spoke of them with veneration and respect. My grandfather, Jonathan Kershaw, attended the old Presbyterian chapel in Blackwater Street, and my father went with him to this place of worship until the time he was bound an apprentice, when his master took him to Hall Fold Chapel near Whitworth, at which place his master was a regular attendant for 56 years, and a member of the church a considerable part of the time. 7 of his last years he sat under my ministry at Hope Chapel, Rochdale. But as I shall, in the course of my narrative, have to make frequent mention of my dear father, whom I greatly loved as a parent and a man that feared God, I forbear to enlarge in this part of my memoir. Suffice to say, he was twice married. He had 3 children, 1 daughter and 2 sons by the first marriage, and 2 sons by the second, of whom I am the elder one. Was in my father's heart to bring up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But alas, be it spoken to our shame, we rebelled against both his entreaties and commands. I am not, however, writing a memoir of the other branches of the family. Therefore, I will confine these remarks to my own case. When I was a little boy, my father took me by the hand, and I went with him peacefully to the house of God. But as I grew up, I began to feel a hatred to divine things. The chapel became like a prison to me. How wretched and miserable have I sat there, stopping my ears literally, that I might not hear the sound of the minister's voice, and shuffling on my seat through weariness of the service. And as soon as the minister said Amen, which was the most welcome word to me in the whole service, out I ran as quickly as possible and set off at full speed until I got home, having a mile and a half to go. When I reached home, I pulled off my chapel-going clothes and put on a second dress that I had to go errands in, and away I went like a wild thing to let loose into the fields and adjoining woods to seek for my companions in sin. I was sometimes forbidden to go out on a Sunday evening and compelled to stop within doors and read the Word of God. My father would also read aloud from some of his religious books, such as the works of John Newton and Hervey and Erskine's Gospel Sonnets, which he was very fond of. As I sat and heard him read the latter, I often thought within myself that it was the most foolish of all books ever written. It contained, as I thought, nothing but a heap of contradictions, and what surprised me the most was, these very contradictions appeared the most pleasant and savory to my father, such as his soul loved. Whilst I write, methinks I see his countenance pleased and delighted, as it was with these good things. On such occasions I was like a vicious horse, champing the bit, prancing with his feet, longing to be gone, for my heart was with my sinful companions. Not a parent in the village kept his children under the same religious discipline as my father did. Many let their children run riot in sin, untamed like the wild ass's colt in the wilderness. Often, whilst my father kept me in at the time others were suffered to go at large, although I loved and revered him as a father, yet because of his religious authority exerted as a means to restrain me from vice, I felt such enmity to his religion, I speak it with shame, that in my heart I cursed both him and his religion. My poor sinful soul longed so much to have it fling in sin, and that I could not bear the least restraint. I was about 14 years of age when my heart began to be more obstinate, my neck as an iron sinew, and my brow brass, Isaiah 48, verse 4. I then determined that I would not go either to chapel or to the prayer meetings as I had done, whilst my fellow companions were enjoying themselves. For this purpose I oft-times arose early on a Sunday morning and scampered away into the woods, unwashed and in my working clothes, keeping out of the way until I knew my father was gone to chapel. Thus, on such frolicsome occasions, I had a whole day of it. But when night came on, the fear of going home seized me. How should I face the frowns of my father and endure the chastisement I anticipated? The enmity of my heart was thus more and more exasperated against his authority. Other boys, my companions, could go home without fear. No questions were asked as to where they had been, or what they had been doing. No parents frowned to fear, nor rod in store for them. I knew that they were at ease, whilst my mind was racked at the thoughts of going home, and such was my blindness and ignorance, I felt as if I was hardly dealt with, and often flattered myself that the day would come when I should be 21 years of age, be my own master, free from such a galling yoke, and be at liberty to do as I pleased, without fear of parental restraint. Thus I was bent and determined to pursue my sinful course, and had it been left to me and my own free will as a fallen, depraved sinner, and my sinful inclinations, the allurements of this vain word and the power of Satan, the allurements of this vain world and the power of Satan by whom I was led captive at his will, I should have gone on in the broad and downward road to destruction. I should have died an enemy to God, his truth, his people, and his ways, and have sunk under the weight of my multiplied transgressions and the wrath of an angry God in his just and holy law, to the regions of the damned, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. Where sin abounded. I have often thought and said in the course of my ministry, that had the Lord left me to myself and the evils that dwell in my carnal heart and my depraved nature, I should have ruined my constitution in the ways of sin, and my poor, vile body would, ere this, have sunk to the grave, and my soul lifted up its eyes in hell. Sin, that accursed thing which a holy God hates, was deeply rooted in my very nature, springing up into bud and blossom, and an awfully corrupt crop would have been the result had not the Lord laid fast hold of me when very young. I know the truth of what our Lord says dwells in and proceeds out of the human heart. For from within, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness, all these come from within and defile the man. Mark 7, verses 21 to 23. I can truly say before the Lord that my soul loves the second chapter of St. Paul's epistle to the Ephesians, for I was dead in trespasses and sins, and walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. I was one of these disobedient children, both to God and my parents, and I had my conversation in times past in the lusts of my flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and was by nature one of the children of wrath, even as others. But God, who is rich in mercy for his great love wherewith he loved me, even when dead in sins, hath quickened my dead soul. This is sweet mercy and precious love. It has often humbled my soul to think that the Lord should ever have thoughts of love and mercy towards such a vile, guilty rebel as myself, and as the effect of that love plucked me as a brand out of the fire, stop me in my sinful course, and bring me with a broken heart and godly sorrow for sin to Jesus' feet. Bless the Lord, even now whilst I write, I feel a little of its sweetness in my soul, causing tears of gratitude to trickle down my cheeks. Well might the Apostle John say, "Behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God." And so sure as this love is felt in the heart of a poor sinner, so sure will that soul love the Lord. As it is written, we love him because he first loved us. His love is better than wine. I have long been begging the Lord to let me have another sweet taste of it by shedding it abroad in my heart by the Holy Ghost, which is given unto us. And bless his dear name, he has granted my request. Of this I am fully assured, that the Lord never loved me because of any goodness that he saw in me, or was done by me, but because he would love me, as he said to Moses, "I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." It is not in our power to enjoy the love of God in our souls, but as he directs our hearts into it by his blessed Spirit. Yea, also I know what it is to be in that dead, cold, helpless state of mind, that I could not give myself the sweet feeling of personal interest in the love of Christ, nor shed one tear of gratitude to the Lord, if the salvation of my soul depended upon it. How true it is that all our springs of comfort and consolation are in the Lord. When he opens, none can shut, and when he shuts, none can open. Kicking against the pricks. But to return to my narrative, in this deplorable condition, the Lord did not leave me without checks of conscience and convictions of sin, as will appear from the following circumstances. On one occasion, I ran away, unknown to my parents, to some cockfightings that were held in the neighborhood. I joined the crowd of people outside the building, but did not see the cocks fight. I heard, however, too plainly the oaths and curses of those within. I would gladly have been inside, but could not find the money to see such cruel sport. The intervals between each battle were occupied by all sorts of carnal diversions, which pleased my sinful inclinations wonderfully. Thus I was one with them, not a jot or tittle better than the rest, considering my age and means. This happened during Whit Week, at which time a double lecture was preached in the chapel my father attended. As I stood by the roadside amongst the ungodly crowd, two men, dressed in their Sabbath day clothes, came past. I knew them well, they were friends of my father's. I had often heard them talk together on religious subjects, and I knew they were going to the chapel. The sight of these godly persons on that occasion was like a dagger to my soul. A secret something spoke within me, "There go Richard and Abel. They are going to the chapel, and do not so much as turn their heads to look at such wicked proceedings. They are good men, going in the narrow way that leads to heaven. But as for me, I am in the broad and downward road that leads to hell." Oh, what a beauty I saw in their demeanor and the path which they had chosen. But what a wretch did I see and feel myself to be. I felt ashamed and confounded. I knew that my being there was unknown to my parents, and that it would grieve my father sadly had he been aware of my folly. I feared, too, that he might find out where I had been, and that I should have to pass under the rod for my transgression. But more than all, I felt that the eyes of God were upon me, and that he was angry with me, for he is angry with the wicked every day. Terror and dread came upon me, so that my carnal, sinful pleasure was completely spoiled, and although the severity of the sensation wore off, I never could forget the horror of soul I that day endured. Though nearly 60 years since, I have it still in remembrance. One of the men above alluded to died young. He was one of the most exemplary youths in the neighborhood. He was often at my father's house, and I well remember many things that I saw in him which caused my conscience to smite me sorely, both for my sins of omission and commission. Thus the Lord preaches by the exemplary conduct of his people, who are as a city set on a hill which cannot be hid. The other individual lived to the age of 82 and was buried in our graveyard under my parlor window, and for 23 years before his death sat under my ministry. We were true friends. And as a token of it, he ordered his executor that after his death, he should bring me his favorite armchair. For many years I had it in my bedroom, and kneeled down by it morning and evening to pour out my heart in prayer and thanksgiving to the Lord, who wounded my conscience on that memorable day, and when I was running headlong to destruction in the highway of sin. How true it is that the Lord is found of them that sought him not, and made manifest unto them that asked not after him. Since the enlargement of the chapel, I have removed this chair into the vestry, it being a more suitable place for it, and where I wish it to remain as long as I live, and after I am dead. Aside, this chair, which is of unusual construction, is still in use in the vestry of Hope Chapel, Rockdale. In one of my Sunday rambles with my companions, we got as far as Simpson Clue, 4 miles from the village where I lived. It turned out rather wet. My conscience began to smite me. My disobedience, Sabbath-breaking, running away from home, instead of going with my father to the chapel, would, in spite of all my endeavors to stifle these convictions, incessantly haunt me. As we returned towards home, we had to pass by an independent chapel called Bamford Chapel, where I had been several times with my father. As we passed, I could see the minister in the pulpit and hear the sound of his voice, but could not distinguish the words. I stood still, and as I looked at him, the feelings of my soul I well remember and will describe as truly as I can. He appeared to me to be a holy, happy man, in the way to heaven himself, laboring with earnestness and zeal to lead others there also. I thought that all that were in the chapel must be good people, traveling to heaven, but that I was in the road to hell. I remember, as though it was but yesterday, saying within myself, "Oh, how happy should I be, were I with my father in that chapel, as I have sometimes been." I felt, too, that I would have given the world, had it been at my command, could I have been with him in that happy heavenly place, which in that day it appeared to my imagination. But alas, wretch that I was, wandering up and down upon the Lord's day, like a fugitive and a vagabond, to the continual grief of my parents, and violating incessantly the dictates of my conscience. I felt in my soul the Lord was angry with me, and went home as though I had been stealing something, and was afraid to be seen. Truly, may it be said, the way of transgressors is hard, for so I found it. My companions in sin could not tell what to make of me, I was sunk so low in my mind. I endeavored to make the best of it, and hide my apprehensions from them as well as I was able. I could not join, however, in their foolish, vain conversation as I had been wont to do, and they thought it strange that I did not run with them to the same excess of riot. The independent minister's name was Parsons. He has now been dead some years. Before the Lord took him, we became familiarly acquainted, so that he supplied for us at the Hope Chapel several times. After the above circumstance, I began to be very miserable in my Sunday rambles. Conscience seemed to speak louder and louder. If I saw anyone going to or coming from church or chapel, he was a terror to me. An awful dread of God came upon my mind, which sank my spirit and spoiled all my carnal pleasures. When I went to bed, especially after one of my Sunday days of transgressions, I could not sleep. My sins began to stare me in the face and burden my conscience. I was sometimes angry with myself for giving way to such feelings, and in my heart said to the Lord, "Go thy way for this time, and when I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. I am only a youth, not yet 15 years of age. I have had no young days of worldly pleasure. When I get older and married and settled in the world, I will begin to think about my death and eternity, and turn to thee, repent, and mend my life, be good and do good, and go to the chapel and live for another world. How fain would I have put the Lord off. I was angry with him too, because he kept wounding me in my spirit. I kicked against the pricks, and in my heart said, Thou shalt not reign over me. But all my resisting and fightings were in vain, for who can withstand the mighty God of Jacob, the Creator of the heavens and the earth, and all that therein is? The Lord made good the truth of these words in my soul, The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. There was long and continued struggling ere I was brought to lie passive in his hands, like clay in the hands of the potter. I do not care who nor what they are, nor how proud and haughty soever they be, nor however determined to have their own foolish, vain, sinful ways and enjoy themselves, if the same great almighty power arrest them which laid hold of me, it will bring them down into the dust of self-abasement at Jesus' feet. I have proved the truth of Job's word, for thou writest bitter things against me, and makest me possess the iniquities of my youth. Thou puttest my feet also in the stocks, and lookest narrowly unto all my paths. Thou settest a print upon the heels of my feet. Job 13, verse 27. They are called a people sought out, and truly the Lord sought me out. But see how heaven's indulgent care attends their wanderings here and there, still hard at heel where'er they stray, with pricking thorns to hedge their way. Sins of youth. Among other vices I got entangled with was card playing, which I found a very enticing thing. The oftener I played and got to understand the game, the more bewitched I grew and embraced every opportunity that I could, unknown to my parents, in order to follow this foolish and often dangerous amusement. The following circumstance, however, put a stop to it. I had been putting by my halfpence for some weeks until I got a little stock of money, when two of my companions and I went one night to play at cards with an elderly female, a person of some property. With this woman we began to play. Being but boys, however, and young in the game, she began to win our money, and so entangled were we all, and that we never thought of the time until she had got all we had. We were then at liberty to go home. On looking at the clock, we found it was between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I began to tremble for fear. I had never been out so late before, and how to get into the house I could not tell. When I got to the door, I pulled off my shoes, thinking to get in and perhaps to bed unperceived. I opened the door as quietly as possible, shutting it carefully after me, but immediately I heard my father jump out of bed and walk across the chamber floor. He met me on the stairs, and I soon felt the chastisement I deserved. He beat me severely and threatened further discipline on the morrow. I got to bed but could not sleep. I saw the wickedness and craftiness of the old woman in keeping us in her house until so late an hour in order to win our money. I was aware my father knew I had laid by what I could spare and fully expected inquiry would be made what had become of it, also where I had been. What answers to make I could not tell. The thoughts also of a severer punishment when I arose lay heavily on my mind. I felt also that such things as card playing, stopping out late at night, grieving and disobeying my parents, were heinously offensive in the sight of God, and oh, what a disgust did I feel in my very soul as I lay of card playing and of the like. And so sick was I made of it that I resolved never to play a game of cards again so long as I lived. Thanks to the Lord for embittering my mind against that which I have been so fond and addicted to. From that time to the present, I have hated the very sight of cards. They are well called the devil's books, as such I view them. When I see or hear tell of their being used in the houses of professors of religion as innocent amusement, I always fear such persons to give but sorry proof of their being called by grace, and that they are professors only, not possessors of true vital godliness. If they were, it would teach them to obey that very seasonable exhortation, abstain from all appearance of evil, 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 22. Such amusements as card playing may suit many whose religion is but a Sunday garb to be pulled off with their holiday clothes, but will not be resorted to by such as fear the Lord all the day long. The old woman has long been dead, leaving a family, some of which are since dead also, and the property wasted long ago. One of the individuals of our party now lies dead at the time I write this, having drunk himself to death. Who has made me to differ? By the grace of God, I am what I am. I have often been led to think under such feelings of the words of Nehemiah, but so did not I, because of the fear of the Lord. I do not remember that I was ever given to profane swearing. One circumstance of the kind, however, I do well recollect. It was on a Lord's Day evening in the summer season. I had been at the chapel, and Mr. Robinson, our minister, was that evening to preach at my father's. After tea, the latter said to me very kindly, "John, you may go out about an hour until service time, but be sure you are not too late for the preaching." I promised, and fully meant to stand to my word. As soon as I got out, I heard that my companions were at the river fishing. I was exceedingly fond of the sport. I could not withstand the temptation, so off I set and joined their diversions. I had not been long amongst them before one of the lads knocked my hat off. It fell into the water and almost spoiled it. Hereupon I was so enraged that I began to curse and swear. This pleased some of my companions exceedingly, especially such as were addicted to that vice. My conscience smote me fiercely. I felt I was a wicked, wretched sinner, unfit for the company of any but such reprobates, but I had not courage to go home and to leave them. After preaching was over and the people had gone home, my father came into the wood to seek me. He did not call, but stood still until I observed him. Immediately I ran towards him and passed him in the field. He said he would teach me better than to absent myself at such times contrary to his orders. Solomon says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." My father did not spare the rod that night, for he took me into the backyard and beat me so severely that I could hardly turn myself in bed, I was so sore for some time. This was a night of sorrow, such as I shall never forget. A sorely wounded conscience within, and a sore body without, I felt ashamed that I had done wrong, and not that hatred which I had felt heretofore against my father. I knew that I deserved chastising, and I trust that it had a good effect upon my mind. I have often wondered at my father's forbearance, seeing that I was so disobedient while so young, and hundreds of times I have thought what must have been the feelings of his mind when he went to chapel and found I was absent, despising both correction and reproof, and setting both precept and example at defiance. How sore and wicked a thing it is for children to slight and disobey their parents. Honor thy father and thy mother is the first commandment with promise. Children are exhorted to obey their parents in the Lord. Cursed is he that setteth light upon his father and mother.